What could legal marijuana mean for the business community in the Chilkat Valley? The Haines Chamber of Commerce wants to talk about that. And we check in with Tanner and Golden King crabbing this season in Southeast. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. The Haines Chamber of Commerce is planning a community forum to discuss the legalization of marijuana and what it might mean to the Chilkat Valley business community. It became legal to have and grow marijuana in Alaska on February 24th after voters approved an initiative in the last election. Retail sales of pot become legal next year. About 70% of Skagway voters and nearly 60% of Haines voters supported legalization, according to election results. Communities are struggling with how to shape pot regulations. Some have formed committees to address the issue. In Skagway, the Public Safety and Health Education and Welfare Committees will discuss how legalization might affect the community. In Haines, the Assembly has alluded to forming a task force, but Mayor Jan Hill said the borough will wait to see what the state does first. But the Chamber Board of Directors say they want to start the conversation now by holding a forum. Board President Kyle Gray says it will be a sort of marketplace of ideas for the community.
We're not really trying to advocate or push one side or the other. We're really just trying to create an informational session that hopefully people can come to, learn something from, and kind of move forward from there about what we want to do as a community.
The board conducted an online survey of its 140 Chilkat Valley members. About 20% of the members responded. They overwhelmingly support the chamber being part of the conversation about the impact of retail pot sales in Haines, and they want the chamber to research legal pot's economic potential. Written comments on the survey mostly supported the chamber weighing in on the business aspects of legalized pot. One comment says, quote, "Yes, the chamber should be part of the conversation regarding the sale of marijuana in Haines as it is part of its mission. No, the chamber doesn't need to be part of the discussion on the use of marijuana. The voters have already decided that." However, another comment says the conversation should wait until after the state has given its direction about regulation. The board is still deciding on a date and location for the forum and who to invite to speak. Board member Barbara Mulford will facilitate. The online survey is still available for chamber members. Tanner crabbing is over and golden king crab is still ongoing in Southeast Alaska. But as Angela Denning reports, the word around the Petersburg docks is that the season hasn't been all that great.
Both seasons opened February 13th with no delay for bad weather, unlike last year. The Tanner season wrapped up February 24th, while golden king crab remains open. When I caught up with Cliff Gudgel at the South Harbor, he was on a break from the golden king crab fishery, also known as brown king crab.
It's pretty poor, worst I've ever seen it in 20 years.
The Petersburg fisherman says the crabs just aren't there this year.
Yeah, there's no recruits, there's very few females, and not very many big crab.
Crabbing is the first big commercial fishery of the year for many in the region. At $12.50 a pound for golden king, it's a pretty good price. But as Gudgel says, price isn't everything.
It could be $1 million a pound. If you don't get any, it doesn't matter.
The price for Tanner crab is much less, as expected. This year it was 2¼ a pound, 28 cents less than the average price buyers paid last year. On another float at the South Harbor is a crew cleaning up the vessel, the Odin.
I'm going to scrub the street back there with this out here.
It's Mark Severson's boat, but his son, Aaron Severson, was a first-time captain for this Tanner fishery.
It went fine. You know, it's not a whole lot of money in it, for me anyway, but it was fun. I've never done it before.
The Tanner fishery only lasted for about a week for the most popular crabbing areas, also called core areas. Other areas were open for 11 days.
Tanner crab is real quick, you know, so if you miss them right off the bat, you're kind of in trouble, so it's a little stressful just getting ready for it and deciding what you're going to do.
Severson says there wasn't a lot of money in it for him at $2.25 a pound. Mikey Nilsson didn't make a killing either as a crew member out for Tanner. Nilsson says the weather was great, but crabbing was slow.
But with these short seasons, it's kind of hard to tell what's really going on with the Tanner crab biomass in general. I think most fishermen would agree on that.
Nelson, who has been fishing commercially for tanners for 14 years, says there seemed to be a lot of pressure this year.
Because of the lack of brown crab and the lack of quotas, it seems like every tanner permit, other than one that I know of, fished this year. So that added some extra pressure. And a six-day short season, like I said, even though we were on building tides, it was kind of hard to see exactly how it was all going to play out. A lot of the traditional spots, from what I understood, didn't have crab where people expected them to be. They were a little bit, I don't know, more dispersed, I guess is kind of the feeling around the fleet, from the crew member's standpoint anyways.
Tanner crabbing isn't it for Nilsson. He will be longlining later this month, as will Severson. As for Gudgell's Golden King season, he says his plan is to go out and put gear away. That entails retrieving about 100 crab pots. Then he'll wait until June to catch salmon in the gillnet fishery. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game expects to have preliminary estimates of the tanner harvest sometime early this month. Meanwhile, the Golden King crab fishery will close by emergency order as the guideline harvest levels are reached in each management area in the region. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
About 2 years ago, a group of First Nations and Alaska Native canoeists paddled from Canada's northwest coast across the U.S. border to Alaska's only Indian reservation on Annette Island. Now a group is planning a return journey, paddling the same route back toward the Tsimshian Native community's roots in British Columbia. KRBD's Layla Carey spoke with one of the group leaders and has this report.
Lawaita means pull together in the Tsimshian language. It's the name chosen for a new canoe society in Metlakatla, and the meaning is more than just an efficient way to paddle a boat. For Southeast Alaska Natives, canoe journeys pull everyone together.
Chamash diwatgun. Metlakatla. Chamash, my traditional name. I'm William Joey Bolton, for those of you listening who know me. I'm from Metlakatla, Alaska.
Bolton is an artist, dance leader, and treasurer of the new Lawaita Canoe Society.
The canoes are an integral part of our society. Everything revolves around the canoes, the culture, the dancing, the protocol.
Bolton says many of those protocols have been forgotten, along with other cultural traditions. Through Lawaita and the upcoming canoe journey, society members hope to start Metlakatla's youth on another journey, rediscovering their heritage.
When you leave a village, the people come down and they bless you before you leave. When you come to a village for a potlatch or just visiting, they have protocols. You don't even step off the canoe until you're greeted by the person on land, and then you say, this is who I am, we come in peace, may we step onto your land. Even though we don't own the land, it's where we're living.
Where they are living in Metlakatla, Alaska, is named for Metlakatla, British Columbia. That's where Annette Island's First Nations settlers originally came from, and that's their destination in the upcoming canoe journey. Bolton says it's not only Tsimshian people who will paddle. Tlingit and Haida natives from Southeast Alaska plan to join the journey, along with paddlers from seven villages in British Columbia. Here's the plan. They'll send their canoes to Ketchikan by ferry, and the paddling portion of the expedition will start on August 6th from the native village of Saxman. They'll paddle about 4 hours to Annette Island in time to join in the annual Founders Day festivities. That day celebrates the founding of the new Metlakatla, which took place on August 7, 1887. After Founders Day, the longer canoe journey will begin. Bolton says it'll take about 2 weeks to complete, with paddlers visiting First Nations villages along the way and ending the trip in Metlakatla, British Columbia. In preparation for the expedition, Lawaita Canoe Society members are helping young participants carve the paddles that will be used for the journey, and they're all connecting with elders to make sure they're following traditions properly, learning the correct greetings, and practicing canoe songs.
Way back when, they had all kinds of different paddling songs, some for a slower pace when you're just, you know, you have 100 miles to go. So you don't want to burn yourself out. And then you have the faster songs when you're passing somebody as, like, you're in the home stretch and you want to make an impression coming in on the wave.
They're working on a program through the Annette Island School District, pairing students up with mentors to make 32-foot cedar strip canoes.
And we'll have to have a feast to commemorate just the canoe.
And that will be another way to engage the community's youth in their rich cultural traditions. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.